All right. Okay. Welcome back to continuing the conversation.
We're here again,
and we have an intro song. How about that?
Yeah. How'd you like that?
More and more professional these days.
Woohoo! We're like a real podcast. Sponsor us.
I know. Yeah. Anybody? Oh, what would I want to sponsor? Who would I want to sponsor? It's hard because I feel like any corporation I name is bad in some way.
Yeah, I feel like Ben and Jerry's. Ooh, good one.
Ben and Jerry's.
Costco.
Costco and Ben and Jerry's. That would be cool.
Great. Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty much where the ethical consumption ends for me.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's about it. Okay.
So, welcome back. My name is Pastor Matt. I am a pastor here at All Saints Lutheran Church, and you are?
I'm Pastor Dana, and I am also a pastor here at All Saints Lutheran Church in Norwood, Young America.
Yeah, shout out Norwood.
Yeah, we didn't do an intro last podcast. We do every other podcast, we do a little intro.
You would hope people.
Do you need like a fun fact about you this time then?
Ooh, fun fact about me.
I just really threw this out. I don't have a fun fact about me.
I had 8 years of orthodontia. That's a long time to have braces.
That is a long time.
My mouth is too small. That's my problem.
Oh, that's too bad.
I got a lot of crowding, so I had to have teeth removed.
And then we both have bad eyes.
Yeah, and we both have bad vision.
Because we have the same nearsighted contact prescription.
Yeah, pretty much. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you recently got yours redone or something. Or I did.
No, you got yours redone.
I did. I had to order mine, and that was a whole ordeal.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah, that's true. Bad vision. Did you have orthodontia?
Braces? I had braces in 7th and 8th grade.
For how long?
And that was it. A year, maybe 2 years, maybe? I don't
that
know.
Seems to be more the norm.
Yeah.
I really hope my kids don't get my bad teeth. I don't know.
I still have to floss around my permanent retainer.
Oh, you
on
have
the
one of those?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Can you see it, everyone?
Yeah, the listeners, yeah. Yeah, I don't have one of those.
I had one for a while.
There you go. You can hear, the thing. I had pretty much everything. I had headgear.
Yep.
I had expanders, retainers. Yep. Yeah, I had teeth removed. I had everything. I had those little rubber bandy things between.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Because I had a underbite.
Oh, my gosh.
So they had to get that under control. And
I feel like underbites are harder than overbites.
They are. And they were like, if this doesn't work, when you turn 18, we're going to have to break your jaw and then reset it. And then you're going to have your mouth wired shut while it heals. And that scared me to death as a kid.
Oh my
and I was like,
gosh.
I'll do whatever you want.
I'll do whatever you want. I'll follow the rules.
I'll follow the rules. I'll wear my headgear every day. I'll wear my retainer every day.
Yep.
Anything but wait until I'm 18. Because I guess they want to wait until you're done like growing. Your head is growing and then break. Does your head stay growing too? I think it does. It must. Because they were like, we can't do it now. But
weird.
Very weird.
I don't know about that.
Very weird. Yep. So yeah, that's my fun fact.
Anyway.
Yeah. Speaking of things about you, we were talking today about the Transfiguration. It's Transfiguration Sunday.
Transfiguration Sunday.
Jesus is on the mountain.
One of the two, I will argue, hardest sermons to do. It's Transfiguration and Christ the King.
And you had to preach both this year.
I did have to preach both this year. So, that's on being an associate pastor.
Yeah,
so
and I make
thanks.
The schedule. I'll let you make the schedule next time. Maybe
I don't really care. Like, I want to preach all of them. So at some point, we got
to
get that
they're
done.
They're just hard. It's hard to speak to it.
Those two are hard because there's so much divinity in those ones. Like, it's not Jesus in a story telling some outsider that they're so loved, right? It's not a parable where you can wrap your head around it. Well, and even it's like unbelievable things, kind of. So it's this hard, like, hey, just believe that this happened, it's like.
That's hard to do sometimes, yeah. And it's and
well. Let's also
how do we
talk,
relate to it.
Well, my other thing, also, as I was thinking about this sermon, was Luke is writing the book of Luke.
Yeah,
and Luke is not on the mountaintop with them.
Yeah, no. So this is again secondhand.
Like,
account.
Like, okay, Luke is maybe writing the stories that he's a part of,
right?
And has a little bit more firsthand account of them. But when Peter and James and John come down, are they reliable narrators to
That's
what happens?
Because
well, I don't know, right?
They've done studies on that. The people are not very good. First person accounts are like notoriously not accurate to event. You know, they've done studies where they show people an event and then they pull them aside, interview them, and people will straight up say stuff that wasn't there.
Yeah.
So this is
that I
why
thought about
need,
that with it.
You need
well,
faith.
And then you've got Peter up there who like he a lot of times doesn't really know what's going on. So poor what Peter. Did he make up in that story? You've got John up there who thinks he's the favorite, like,
yeah,
and
yeah.
he tells everything in the yeah in mm-hmm. that way.
Yep.
And maybe he was the one telling the story about Peter being like, we should stay up here. So yeah. anyway, yeah.
Yeah, maybe he set him yeah. up. Set him up to be lambasted again, to be, you know, shot down.
Right.
As Peter
right.
always does.
Yeah, Peter kind of takes that
yeah,
fall.
It's tough. He always does.
Sweet
little Peter. I liked that. That was a funny little way to identify him, because he could probably always be identified as sweet little Peter
sweet
who
little
can't
Peter.
Get it right. But this made me think, talking about mountaintop experiences,
oh, yeah.
Do you have any mountaintop experiences in your walk of faith?
Just walk of faith. I thought you just meant my life.
Your life, whatever.
I was actually going to say when Kansas won the 2022 yeah. national championship game.
I feel God at this Kansas game. I
feel God in the streets of Lawrence, yeah, Kansas.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Faith mountaintops.
Yeah.
I've always had a really hard time with that kind of thing, and mm-hmm, I felt like I growing up
Floated.
That was, but it was so valued. It was this like you have to have a good story to go into ministry to
right.
like inspire people.
Are you
or
a
you
true
have
Christian
to,
if you haven't had this yeah. moment where the clouds part and God speaks to you?
Kind
you know?
Of, or yeah. like. Or some turning around moment where mm-hmm. you were like on such a wrong path and then all of a sudden it became clear.
Boom, 180,
like,
yeah.
And or yeah, or experiences like that.
Because I know a lot of people that have that, and we have a lot of colleagues that have
yeah.
that, and it's great. And those are
right.
moving
and those are,
stories and everything.
Yeah,
but it
really
is hard
cool.
sometimes if you don't have that to be like, oh.
Yeah. And so I think I was like self-conscious of that for a while, and then going through the candidacy process, like you get
yeah.
asked your story
so many times.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I have said this a lot, like I just went on to the next thing. Like
yeah.
all of a sudden I'm here, all of a sudden I'm serving in a prison.
Yeah,
like mm-hmm. That was crazy. And I think that those kind of experiences
yeah.
helped me along too, mm-hmm. to have to own up to like, hey, I'm kind of self-conscious of my own story
yeah.
and then going into ministry and for people to be like, why? Like what?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So
you feel like you need this kind of thing.
Yeah. yeah. That value of the mountaintops is like really hard because
yeah, it is.
We think we want that. And maybe that makes faith harder.
Yeah.
To have mountaintops.
Yeah. In
so,
a lot of ways it does for sure.
So high, right? Because then aren't you always then searching for that again?
Yeah. Yeah. And be like, why isn't this happening for me? Yeah.
So kind of a steady faith of like, I'm just doing the next mm-hmm. best thing.
You're getting dragged from thing to thing. Is
also
like,
that is
too.
What it, that is what mm-hmm. it felt like a lot of times. Getting
yeah.
dragged from thing to thing.
By the ear, which is, that's true too. That's real too.
I also, I'm just doing a lot of talking already. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's good.
But I'm thinking about, I also, like one of my defining moments of my faith journey was losing a friend.
Yeah.
A few years ago. That was what, 2017.
Yeah.
And I like really needed to be loved in that moment and surrounded with a lot of other people. And my friends were so good about that.
Mm-hmm.
So part of those mountaintop experiences do come from the dark valleys of
yeah.
like feeling like you actually need people
yeah.
and little moments of like we were in our 20s and we were mm-hmm. in college and some of my friends were like, we just need to go have some fun a little bit too.
Yeah.
And, you know, we went out to a bar and a couple of the guys in my friend group who would like never go to that bar
mm-hmm.
came. And it was like little stuff like that where it was like, you actually did that to come for me,
right.
not, you know, because it's a Friday night in college and we're
right.
going out. Right.
Yeah.
That was a like, that felt really special to have people
mm-hmm.
Surround me in that. And so,
yeah. So that's funny that like a mountaintop
yeah.
experience can come from a valley experience.
But that's the whole point, isn't it?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
That,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because a lot of, to your point of like that, a lot of people have that turning around experience as their mountaintop experience. It's funny that it's like, it's such a low point can be that moment from God.
Yeah.
It's not, it,
yeah.
When you hear mountaintop, you think like, it's gotta be this high, like, whoa.
Right.
Because when I
right.
thought of it, I was like, what are my mountaintop experiences? And I think a lot of them came from like going to camp, You know, that's a very camps common always, one.
They're so like
because
pressured.
It's emotional.
Yeah, it's,
you know, they put you in this situation with all these kids your age and you're just like loaded up on sugar and nobody's sleeping. So like, of course you have these like, moments because it's like, it's all so much. It's like putting everybody in a pressure cooker. But I went to Camp Wapo, Wapagasset in Amory, Wisconsin. Did you ever go to Camp Wapo? Do you
know
Camp
Wapo? I've been as a leader.
I love Camp Wapo. Yeah, staff. But that's one of those, like, you're out in the wilderness and, you know, out at the campfire. And that's like a, God moment for me. But they don't always have to be like, everything's great moment. You know, that your mountaintop moment can come from a valley moment. And like you said, isn't that the point?
I think
it strengthens you for that mountain or that valley moment and for more like it, and to seek out others that are in their valley moments and point them in the right direction too.
Well, I grew up in Young Life, so my camps were all Young Life camps, which are very mountaintop-y experiences. Mm-hmm. And so, like, yes, I would call those mountaintop experiences, but I feel like I've done a lot of deconstruction of those too, of like what were the influences of that kind of space that make you feel, you know, you're caught up in all those feelings too. Mm-hmm. So like, was that a mountaintop experience or was I just like swept up in this wave of everyone else is saying that it is, so I better get on board with it too, right? Mm-hmm. So, and maybe we're just processing mountaintops too hard, but it just should be a like...
Just let it be what it is, I guess. I mean, I don't know. This is the Sunday for it, right?
Yeah.
So you brought up those big high pulpits and things like in those old churches. Yeah. Have you ever preached in one of those? Because I never have.
No.
From one of those pulpits where you got to walk up a little windy step and then you're like on, you're like 6 feet above people in some places.
I was thinking about, the one I was thinking about was I went to Poland a couple years ago for the Lutheran World Federation Assembly.
Nice. Oh, that's
and
cool.
Then they sent, it was so cool. I want to go again. It's every 7 years. Okay. So it'll be 2030. But they sent everyone to different churches. Like they assigned people different churches to go to on Sunday morning.
That's nice.
And I was lucky enough to actually stay in town, which it would have been cool to go to a different city.
Sure.
But,
yeah, get out a little bit.
But I stayed in town, and that church had a high balcony. First of all, it was packed because you've got all these tourists and they're visiting. Mm-hmm. So it was like standing room only, and it was so hot and it was terrible. But because it was standing room only, we could see the pastor from the pulpit because he was so high up there.
Yeah, he was up there. There's a, like you said, there's a reason behind it. It's not just for the looks, which it kind of is, but it's also very practical.
Right.
You're up high so everybody can see you, even those in the way back.
Yeah. So, and so personally, I don't love to preach from the pulpit. And that's just a personal preference.
It's more approachable if you're
But I have heard a couple people say that it's harder to see me when I'm not in the pulpit, too.
Sure.
And I'm kind of like, well, that's too bad.
Too bad.
I'll sit closer to the front. Yeah. But get a phone book or something. I get the purpose of it, too. And then I felt like it was maybe important to talk a little bit about, you know, why we wear robes.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of mentioned
the symbolism
before,
of it.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times robes get interpreted as like, oh, you think you're better than everyone because you're the pastor.
Set apart.
And that's not the original purpose.
No.
Like,
yeah.
Do you know why we wear the ropes around our waist?
The little cincture things?
The cinctures? I learned this on internship.
I don't know why we wear cinctures. Does it make it, I don't know, holds everything in place?
So it's actually because monks, like or Martin Luther, basically, would store the money in their belts as a cincture. And that's where the cincture came from, was to have like a fanny pack.
A place to hold it.
Uh-huh. So it's kind of a weird, like, it evolved from carrying the money around when people would give them money. So so there was a bishop in California who was like, I don't need that. Like,
No, you don't need it.
You don't,
I mean, and we don't need the albs either. I mean, we don't need the robes at all, really.
Right.
I mean, because like we assign a lot of symbolism to these things, but also it's just like churches in Europe were very cold. They didn't have central heating and air conditioning. Like you said, when you were you were there, it's so swelteringly hot because these big stone churches are super cold in the winter and warm in the summer. So when it's cold in the wintertime, the priests and the monks just wore big blankies around, essentially.
Big snuggies.
Big snuggies around, because it's like it's cold in here. Yep. But then we've changed it to be like, well, it's a symbol of our baptism. And, you know, it's like, sure. But also, we're from this European church where it was cold, you know. So that's funny. I didn't know that about the money belts.
I know. Mm-hmm. Money belts. That's why we have the ropes.
But yeah, we have in our sanctuary, we just have a chancel, which is like one step up, and that's where you preach from. Mm-hmm. And then our pulpit is like one more step up.
Right.
So it's not, if you were, what, one more step up, people in the back could see you?
Right. I'm like, it's
so
not
that. So it's a little bit of an exaggeration. But... people are like, I wish I could see you. It's like, it'd be one step higher. It's really not that much.
Sometimes people just complain.
Yeah.
It's fine.
And I like, our worship space is very utilitarian. It's not very high church with the big sweeping, big pulpit and a huge ornate lectern or
even
altar,
like a big
or anything,
cross or artwork, like
it's just wood.
The cross is high, but
and I like that because it does simplify, but we do miss some of the symbolism of it all. And I do sometimes wish we had a church where you had a big high pulpit. That'd be kind of cool.
I wish we had an organ.
And I miss the organ too.
I know.
I do.
I didn't think I liked an organ. Mm-hmm. And
me
then
either.
You miss it when
and
it's
then
gone.
It's like, man, especially some Sundays when they can really make it sing. But the problem, there aren't very many people playing organ.
That's true.
And it's an expensive thing to maintain and keep. So it's like churches are going less and less.
Yep.
But sadly.
And we also need to expand our sanctuary before we do any more
stuff before anything
it.
Else.
It is crowdy.
We're getting, which is a good problem
to
have.
Need to take our ropes off. It's warm in there.
It is. It heats up with all the people in there. So yeah, it's good. We miss out on the symbolism. I'm reading Moby Dick right now.
Oh,
and in Moby
what
Dick,
a read.
I know. There's this great chapter where Ishmael visits a chapel to worship before he sets out on his whaling voyage. Mm-hmm. And it says that, most of the sailors went to go visit this little sailor's cathedral, before their voyages. And Father Mapple is the name of the guy in the chapter that gives his sermon from up on his elevated pulpit. Like he needs to climb a rope ladder to get into, which I thought was very funny to picture this old priest climbing up on this little rope ladder. And then he pulls it up behind him. So it's you
funny.
Get up
so no
into
one else
the pulpit,
can get up there.
And then you pull it up. So you're like, you're up there. Nobody else can climb up. And the pulpit is shaped like the prow of a ship.
Okay, yeah.
So it's like the front of a big ship because this is a sailor's cathedral. And I also love the imagery of the prow as the pulpit because that's what leads the ship.
Yeah.
It's the first through the waves and it's the first through the waters and the storms and it leads, right? Just like our preaching and our hearing of the word leads the people to whatever. And there are churches that have, I looked it up and there are a lot of churches that have this like ship imagery for their pulpits, which is kind of interesting. So it wasn't a complete
It's
creation.
Basically U.S. Bank Stadium then.
It pretty much, that's right. It's like the Viking ship.
It's the Viking ship.
So yeah, but the symbolism is cool, but it does, like the rope ladder and like the albs, the robes and everything, these symbols can also help or hurt us because it makes it seem like we're trying to create division between who's in and who's out.
Well, and that's, I think a lot of churches who don't wear robes would say that. Like, we're just
we're
in our
inclusive.
Normal, or we're in our normal clothes and
just
we're
like
one
you.
Of the people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's with anything. It can go either way, right? When we put meaning to something, then we want to tell people what the meaning is, too.
That's true.
I think that's
like
the...
You and I sit in the congregation.
Yeah.
A lot of pastors sit like up on the chancel, like separated from the people, and we are in the congregation. There's also some symbolism in that. But and you brought up the first class thing, which is so funny because
this should be open. It's civil rights. This
civil
is the
'90s. The '90s.
The bridesmaids quote.
Love it. Yeah. I know. I love it.
You got my Taylor Swift joke too.
I did. I know.
Taylor Swift. Not a lot of people got that.
No,
there were not a lot of giggles.
Fellow owners, and they're like, huh? What?
Yeah,
she's not an owner. Yeah, get it? She owns the NFL.
It's well, funny. And then I got to wear my Taylor Swift stole.
Yeah, that's right.
Today,
you had your Taylor stole.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Have you ever flown first class? Speaking of first class,
I got upgraded.
I did one time. Yeah.
It, like easy, quick, like from Chicago. So you couldn't really enjoy it. No.
Dang.
Well, okay, but I don't know any of the rules of first class, right? Like the tray tables aren't like, they don't come from the.
No, because you have so much leg room.
In front of you. They come from like the side. I was like, I don't even know how to take the tray table. I guess I'll just sit here and hold my drink.
Everybody knew. They were like, she doesn't know. She's not a real first class.
Then everyone looked at me and was like, she doesn't. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know how to do it. And I'm like, you're right. I don't.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't belong here. I belong in the back.
Where's my economy seat? Yeah,
in steerage.
Put me in a middle seat, okay? I'm just uncomfortable
just
now.
Just put me under the plane with the luggage. Yeah. I'll be fine down there. Yeah, I was a kid when my dad got an upgrade and gave it to me and my sister. So we got up there, but we were kids, so we couldn't even enjoy the free drink.
Right.
We were children, so that's sad. But yeah, the point of the little curtain that separates first, which is so silly because it, as you mentioned, it doesn't, it's so thin.
Right,
you can
it doesn't
see through
like,
it.
Do anything.
You can hear through it. Like the only purpose of it is to be
it creates a barrier.
People up here are special. People back there are not. And it's like, what is the point? It doesn't do anything. There's no purpose.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it keeps the people in the back from going to use their special potty up front.
Yeah.
Like this is our special one.
This is our special potty.
Isn't that funny?
Yep.
But yeah, so I thought that was very funny. But this we talked about how this is a hard Sunday to preach.
Yeah.
But it's funny because this is finally a Sunday when Jesus does God stuff.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and I kind of said that.
You did.
In the beginning.
Right. Because it's true. Right. It's like, this is finally, like, Jesus is doing something that we think a Savior should be doing. And this is what, like, people in the ancient world would have gotten this.
Yes, this would have made a lot of sense.
To
the
Greeks.
The Messiah should be talking to God.
And,
like, what?
And to the Greeks, you know, the gods live up on Mount Olympus.
Yes.
If you want to go talk with the gods, you got to go climb the mountain and go be with them.
Right.
Because that's where the gods live, right? Yep. And the gods only come down to kind of make mischief and do little things. But like gods are up there. So it's like finally Jesus is getting with the program.
Yeah.
Like go up there and do your God stuff up with God. But this is such a hard, even though it's something that we're like, finally Jesus is doing something that orients itself with how we orient the world, where there's a special place where God should be and there are places where God isn't. It still is hard for us to put words to.
Well, that's because we shouldn't want to orient the world like that.
No.
And
that's why Jesus does so little of that stuff. He's very, very rarely in the palace, very rarely
in
the
temple. But we're
the
ones doing that, right? Like Jesus only exists on a Sunday morning.
This
when
is
we
God's
go to
house.
Church. Right.
Yeah,
this is God's house. And, you know, I think people who apologize to pastors for like
swearing and stuff
are really funny as this like set apart, like they're people of God. They can't hear a swear word.
They don't know
what
a swear word is.
They don't ever use them themselves. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that where it's like your teacher's living at school, right? The pastors must live at church.
Weird seeing the teacher out at the store. It's like, that is true. I love that meme that's like, what do people do to you when they find out you're a pastor? And it's like a pie chart. And it's like a tiny sliver is like, ask me questions about faith. A tiny sliver is ask me about what it's like being a pastor. And then the whole piece of the pie is like, they just swear less. And that's that seems to be my experience. Nobody, just find out I'm a pastor and they're like, oh, sorry that I said the S word 5 minutes ago. It's like, I've heard it before and I don't care.
Right, I've said it out of my own mouth.
It's fine. I didn't judge you, like, not holding it against you.
Uh-huh. Do you need some holy water? Mm-hmm. Like, should we take communion now?
Yeah, that's right. Maybe, I'll absolve you.
This summer went to the rodeo in Wyoming with a friend. And one of the nights we were out at this dive bar, like a dive bar where there's like maybe 10 seats at the bar. And
it's a honky tonk.
It's a honky tonk.
Yep.
They sell cigarettes at the bar. Like, I don't think that's even legal, but
throwback.
They do.
Yeah. Who's going to report them?
Like, this is the bar where the bartender and like a couple of the guys in there were telling us jokes or joking with us, whatever. And they were getting a little bit like on edge. And I was like, I feel like I just need to pause for 1 second and inform you that I am a pastor. And they go,
see their demeanor change.
Yeah. No. They go, cool. And they double down on the dirty jokes. They got so much worse.
Oh,
I was like,
I wonder why.
I was like, wait, did you hear me?
Yeah. What are you trying to do here?
I don't know. It was just so funny that they were like, that it was just the opposite reaction that I've ever gotten. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I guess you're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, at least be real. Yeah. It's like, it's yeah, sure. Be who you are. Don't fake it.
Yeah. But yes, this separation idea that Jesus is finally doing God things and separating himself from the people, right? Like
going up there.
Jesus is a God. Why would he hang out with all the
transform pearly white kids? Just be this creature now that's other than, and we'll just descend from the mountain every once in a while.
Yeah.
To
choose
bless
the
us
favorites.
And choose the favorites and then retreat back to the mountain. Whereas like you said in your sermon, and like we see throughout the rest of the gospel, that's exactly the opposite of what Jesus is going to do. He's going to spend very little time up on the mountain. He's going to spend all the rest of his time, you know, sitting in people's filth and, you know, and breaking bread with those people. And that's what it is. And that's, interesting. But it's a hard one to preach. And which is funny because the title of your sermon is the three-word sermon.
Yes.
Right? Listen to him. And as simple as it is to say, and as simple as it is to hear, it's something that we just cannot do.
Nope.
I wish we could. And this made me think, like, what would our world look like if we actually listened to him? If we actually listened to Jesus? Because that's what God commands us to do on the mountain. Listen to him.
I mean, we would take away a lot of ourselves in the world. In a good way.
Yeah.
In a, like... it's not about me anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Right, like we are so focused on ourselves and our own gain. And even when we're serving or doing something, it's like, who's going to see that we served them?
Right, yeah.
And
take a little
selfie. They going to know that we did that? And, and part of that is social media too, right?
Yeah. Like it's the world we live in.
Mm-hmm. It's the world we live in, but like if we actually listened to Jesus, I think it would be a lot less about us.
Yeah.
And
maybe that's it. That's the, you know, how do we on this Transfiguration Sunday, how do we transfigure our own lives to live this out? And I guess the secret and the way to do it is to turn that focus inward, outward. Just like flip yourself.
Right. But okay, empty but this yourself, was the point of the statistics that I kind of shared in there too.
Yeah, the 60% of Americans being lonely, that's
the loneliness,
such a wild statistic.
Yes, we have the most access to information and to other people's lives.
We're more connected than we ever could have possibly. I could right now connect with somebody on the other side of the world. We could have a full-on conversation.
Right.
But are we going to feel connected as a
people? Or I was thinking about celebrities who like I feel connected to or know, but I'm like, I don't know, you know, because they share so much content. And I'm like, wait, I don't know them. Like,
and you can comment on their post and they might like it or they might even comment back, which would be crazy. But even then... You know, that's so superficial. It's that parasocial relationship. Everybody's living these weird parasocial relationships with, I mean, I listen to so many podcasts and I feel like I know these people because I, you know, they're in my ears and it's like, but it's not a real relationship.
No.
So you
and
can
so,
feel connected, but be completely lonely at the same time.
Which is exactly what we're seeing, right? Mm-hmm. Like we have gone so far into our own worlds that we should look up statistics of like how many people work from home because you're not even interacting with people.
No, even with your work colleagues.
Home. Like you're just maybe sitting at home. Maybe you're on a Zoom call or whatever, but, and as I said, physical distancing more and more in my sermon, I was like, COVID.
Social distancing.
Social distancing, physical distancing. Like it brought up a lot of memories, but these loneliness statistics were happening before that.
Yeah.
Like this wasn't all COVID, the just the self absorption of our own lives.
Yeah.
Like and maybe the information that we have access to is too much right now. Like
or we've isolated ourselves from outside information. And that was your point when you brought up the fact that more and more, you know, we can break down the voting statistics of a city and see more and more of these cities are entrenched. Like this is a blue town. This is a red town.
Yep.
And you would think, okay, these are little pockets where everybody's friends with each other because they all think alike and they all talk alike. But despite these little echo chambers we've set up, we're still being driven deeper and deeper into loneliness.
Right, which is so, and you would think.
You would think it's like, we're all like-minded. We're all buddies here.
But we should all be best friends.
Apparently, we're in our own little echo chambers and we go, I don't know.
What's the point of being around people who agree with you? I think that was because of those statistics. I was like, then what's the difference?
Right.
If you're still lonely.
You should be putting yourself in a situation where you're with somebody who disagrees with you. So you can have a conversation and maybe come to some mutual something.
I don't even think it has to be that much work. It's just people connect with differences. Yeah. Like, and we have so undervalued that.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Makes
the world go around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's our strength is our diversity and our differences.
It's complementary to each mm-hmm. other too, you know, you don't want to be the same as everyone else. Then you wouldn't have anything to talk about or do. Like, yep. Wouldn't you want to have circles of people who have different hobbies?
Yeah.
And so you can try a bunch of different hobbies or like different places to go. So you can try different foods.
Try different food. Yeah.
Things like that.
See different art. Yeah.
See different stuff.
See the beauty of the world.
This isn't even political right now. This is just like.
The world. Just go experience the diversity of the world. It's a beautiful place. There's so much out there. And if we just stick in our own little echo chambers, we're not going to see it all. So that was a good way to enter into what this story means to us. Because poor Peter gets humbled again.
Oh, sweet little Peter.
Sweet little Peter. You know, he tries to walk on water with Jesus. Because Jesus is walking on the water. And Peter thinks, I'll do that. He takes one step out and then sinks. He constantly is rebuked by Jesus. This Sunday's text in particular. He cuts off Malchus's ear, gets rebuked again.
Well, I mean, but most famously before that is famously in the Bible, obviously, is denying Jesus three times.
Yeah, and then he denies Jesus three times on Good Friday,
I'm not going to do that. I would never.
And it's and like it, time right? and time like, again. Yeah. It's like, get behind me, Satan.
Yep.
He's sinking in the water. He's denying Jesus. He's trying to start this revolution by cutting off Malchus's ear. It's like he's constantly missing the mark.
Do we get his call story in the Gospels? Or is he just like one of the group?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, he's just one of the...
Because I want to... Man, if we got like more narration of some of these ones,
I would love to hear that.
Like, because Peter first being called as someone who sounds so emotional and so in touch with.
Yeah, he's very mercurial as a disciple, right? He's like, just constantly flying off the handle.
Yeah.
Like, I got it, Jesus. And it's like, calm down, Peter.
Calm down.
Calm down.
But that's why I want to hear his call story.
Yeah.
Like, then when Jesus was like, follow me, was he like, whoa!
Wow, here I go. I'm going to throw everything off. Yeah.
Was he so dramatic about it? Probably.
But we relate to Peter because that's how we feel a lot of times. That's why Peter is like the most relatable person in the Gospels, because that's how we as Christians are trying to be, is, you know, we're trying to throw ourselves fully into this thing, no matter what it is. So, you know, we like Peter. We like our mountaintops.
But with a little bit of stumbles here.
Oh, yeah. We stumble all the time. Like, we're making mistakes. And, Jesus is trying to set us back on our feet every time. And we like our mountaintop experiences. We want to keep at those. Like, let's build a home here. Let's just live here on this mountain, Jesus. It's great that we're up here.
We're doing God stuff.
We're doing God stuff. Like, finally, this is good. Like, no one can question the divinity of what we're doing. But we can't. We can't stay here. We have to move on. And we, you know, like, I like the way you worded it. We tumble down the mountain.
Yeah, I thought of that imagery.
We stumble,
doesn't that kind of feel like how Jesus would do that too? Of like, well, there it was.
Boom.
And we got to get down as fast as we can.
A lot of people, we
got to tumble.
Yeah, we got to tumble down. And a lot of people, I think, would relate to that in their call story of this mountain high experience, if that was your case. And then you just feel like you get like pushed down the mountain.
Yep.
And you don't stick the landing all the time. You kind of tumble all the way down.
Yeah.
Back to, you know, healing a man with demons or healing the sick or whatever it is you're doing.
But that's how we should want to do it. I think when we have our faith mountaintop experiences, we want to stay there.
Right.
We want to be up there and comfortable. And if we were really doing it right, maybe we would tumble down a little bit faster.
Yeah.
To like, there's great, that was awesome. Let's go to the rest of the
There's some urgency to it. We got to go.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's ultimately kind of what Transfiguration Sunday is all about, is not really the mountain. It's not about the mountaintop. It's not about this like place set apart. It's this call that we all have, whether your call was a mountain high experience or a low valley experience, but it's this call to blur those lines that separate us, you know. Yeah. Tear open that first class curtain, you know, erase all of those. It's civil rights. Like, erase all of that stuff. Remove all the like dividing lines that set people apart. So as the church, we're kind of called to be these little like smudging agents to go around smudge all the little lines and blur them together.
Hey, that
a little
can
bit
go
more.
Real well with Ash Wednesday.
Yeah, maybe smudge I'll stick agents. With this. We're smudgy agents. Yeah. All right. Stay tuned, podcast listeners.
I like that.
I might bring that into Wednesday.
But this is, you know, okay. You can have all your opinions about Taylor Swift that you want, but to go into a city to play shows, to be a billionaire,
right?
Rolling into cities to play shows that hundreds of thousands of people are coming to,
right?
And kind of silently, she like gives to food banks, and helps out in that community, like
right.
And I don't think there's ever going to be a way to fully blur lines for her to be a normal person ever again. But
no,
like,
you really can't. When
that's
you're her,
the point of having your resources,
right?
Is that when you go to a community, you use it for the you use your influence for good.
Something good. Like, and that's what we're called to do. And that's kind of on a smaller scale because we're not billionaires, but we can do something where we can come down from whatever mountaintop. Because I mean, in a lot of ways, the church is. On Sunday, Sunday worship is kind of a mountaintop experience.
Yeah.
Because we're literally
that
preaching.
That could have been said in there, I guess.
Yeah. No, I mean, you did. I mean, this is like on Sundays, we're preaching to the in crowd. Everybody's already here.
Right.
There's a couple of occasions every once in a while when somebody wanders in from the street, but it very rarely happens. I feel like most people who come to church on Sunday, we can look around and be like, You're a member. I know you. Yeah. Like, we know everybody.
Sometimes
in
you
that
don't
room.
Know all their names. But.
Yeah, sometimes. I'm doing my best. Got to memorize the directory, I guess. But
we can do more name tags.
We could. We should do some name tag Sundays. But yeah, when we're here on Sunday, this is a mountaintop experience. So we're called to go from this place. We're kind of pushed out into the world,
tumble down, and start smudging. That is the other part of the gospel story that I made up. Is we don't get the conversation with Peter that Jesus says we got to get down there.
Right.
All of a sudden they're just down there.
Yeah.
And so we can assume that Peter said, "Hey, let's stay up here. It's so good." And Jesus says, "No,
because we have stuff to do."
But you know, how does Jesus relay that to Peter as Peter's having this mountaintop experience? You know,
that's a good point. Yeah,
in worship,
Peter says to Jesus, "It's good for us to be here. Let's set up three tents: one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah." And then it's almost like mid sentence because it says, "While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them." So it's like God took it upon himself.
Yeah,
God's self to just like break in and be like, "This is my son. This is my son. Listen to him. He's the chosen one." And then Jesus is alone after that. And then smash cut to they're now down the mountain. So what happened afterwards? I guess.
I like the interrupting of it, though, actually. Mm-hmm. Because then it's an actual, like, listen to him.
Yeah.
Like, stop talking.
Yeah.
Stop
Peter,
it.
Peter. Stop.
Enough words.
Peter, please. Yeah. And that's poor Peter. That's his story throughout the Gospels, is just constantly being told, like, sit down.
Yeah.
Calm down. Uh-huh. Relax. This isn't your place.
This isn't yours.
You don't own this. So very
interesting. And
then
they go down. Well, and so in the lectionary, the next few verses where Jesus goes to heal the man possessed with demons, that's in the reading for today, which I cut it out because I was like, we got a lot to do anyway.
Yeah, and it distracts
from what it does distract about. Because if you only talk about healing the demon, then you miss the whole God stuff part of the transfiguration.
Yeah, leaving it just like that is perfect because that's where we are.
And I wanted to mention that that's what happens directly after. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
we don't have to let it distract.
Right. From
because
this.
The way it's left is how we're left on Sundays.
Yeah.
You know, we're left after worship being like, this is my son. Listen to him. go, you know, now go in peace, serve the Lord. And we're just left tumbling down our mountain to try to figure out what we need to do next.
Yep.
And yeah, I like that. So hard Sunday to preach, but a good word that we needed to hear. Yeah.
Whoop.
You got anything else? Should we wrap this up?
No, didn't you have was there an end question or something? Or was it like what did you leave out of your sermon that you wish you put in?
Oh yeah.
Was or what did you keep you, in that you?
Mm-hmm. Was there anything you went to and you, left on the cutting room floor or?
I wish I would have wrapped in the children's message a little more to my sermon. Mm,
yeah, there's smiley faces.
This idea of like shining faces, mm-hmm. and you know the one kid gave the perfect answer of like our faces shine when we help people.
That was great.
I didn't even have to tell him that.
Yeah, we're always hoping through these children's times that they say something.
Hey, like, if it's not right, I hope it's say the funny, darndest
things. Yeah, it's like we're hoping for a kid say the darndest things quote where it's like, and that, you know, when does your face shine? And we want them to be like chocolate cake or something. Yeah, but it's they have to be so cute and be like, when I help people. It's like, of course, when you help people, you sweetheart. So sweet.
And this is also why I go back and forth of like, I like children's sermons to be different from the message too. Yeah. So that everyone can grab a little bit of the children's sermon and be like, wait, mm-hmm. the kids get it.
Yeah.
Why can't I get it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because we have looked at people for too long as burdens. And mm-hmm. how can we think more about our faces shining?
Yeah.
Helping people.
Yeah.
Being humanity together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Reaching down into those valleys and, you know, mm-hmm. and then saying like, this is the shining face that Jesus is all about.
Right. This is the transfiguration we're talking about.
This is the transfiguration.
Not up on the mountain, not in this special other place where we're set apart as the chosen people, but down with the people in need, healing the sick, you know, visiting with the lonely, you know, reaching out to the outcast and the outsider and the immigrant and whoever, that's when our face shines.
And you ask people who volunteer or mm-hmm. who do some of that hard kind of work and that is the fulfilling piece of it. So why mm-hmm. are we so scared to do it or afraid of it or like we don't want to or we're so set apart in our own ways that we don't do some of that work or we don't experience some of that, and then you talk to people who do it or you go do it and you're like, that was the best thing
ever.
That's
the best thing ever. Yeah. And you're glowing. Literally you're just glowing for days because you did what you're called to do.
Right.
But we still can't get it.
And so I don't know. That was cute to see all the kids' little shining faces.
Yep, they were good. And I took some pictures. We can put it on social media.
Good.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, that was good. I like that. And a good connection to the reading from Exodus, the Moses on Mount Sinai thing with his glowing face and his veil.
And there's so much in there with mm-hmm. the veil and God. Yeah. And so I had been trying to do some research of like, why was it Moses and Elijah up there of the law and the prophets? And why was it some of this? And those are kind of hard to put too much theology into a sermon.
It gets in the weeds a little bit.
It gets a little too deep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, I guess I don't know who else you would have chosen from the Old Testament. Like, David's a pretty big name, I guess.
Yeah, but you got the law from Moses, and you got Elijah represents the prophets.
Yeah.
So you have, like, the embodiment of the law and the embodiment of the prophets. It helps that Elijah never dies in the scriptures. Yep. You know, Elijah's just sort of taken up to heaven.
Which is why I couldn't say they were dead bodies.
Because they weren't.
They're just actual bodies.
Back.
Right.
They're just away in their back.
But Moses
does die. Yeah, Moses does die before entering the promised land. But I don't know. Who's to say? That's why, like you said, you get in the weeds so much of it.
There are weeds right there of like, then what is this promised land if mm-hmm. Moses and Elijah are somehow coming back together, one of them died, one of them didn't.
Yeah.
Is this future promised land something mm-hmm. something that we don't understand already?
Right. And the people who read it immediately would have been comforted because the promised land is not theirs anyway anymore, you know.
Right.
Because they're in exile.
Yep.
You know, or, you know, under foreign occupation. You can't go back to your big temple and have that that mountaintop experience of like, we're the chosen people in our chosen land. It's like, no, you're all displaced and you have no temple and you're no people without a land. Yep. And it's the same can be said today. The Holy Land still is a place that is ripped apart by violence. And how many people there, Palestinian Christians that cannot go back to their homeland because it's rubble right now. Right. There are many, many Palestinian Christians that don't have a homeland anymore. So how can you be a person without a homeland? It's comforting to know that that promised land is more than just a physical space.
Right.
And that's why Jesus, ultimately we can't stay here. There is no let's set a big monument here, because then what happens when that monument gets destroyed?
Right.
Yep. Same thing, if you say the temple is God's house, is where God lives. Okay, what happens when it burns down?
Yep.
This church, All Saints burned down.
Yep.
This church had an arson fire. So what does it mean to these people to know that the church is more than a place?
Yeah.
It's a big thing. So it's scriptural and it helps people who are in that low valley moment. So.
Yeah. Hmm. Yep. Cool. So we enter from Epiphany into Lent. It's on Wednesday in here a couple days. And this just feels like a funny checkpoint.
It is.
But it is a like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Christ the King is the same way, isn't it?
Right.
You brought that up.
Yep.
Yeah, Christ the King is the same thing. It's like, here we go, new church calendar year. It's like. It feels so weird in the middle of this to just go, here we go, and we're going.
Yeah, but I think it feels like the blurring of the mountaintop to the valley to me.
Yeah.
Where Epiphany is this light of Jesus. We get Jesus' baptism and Jesus as the light of the world, and then smash that with Ash Wednesday and Lent of looking at our humanity and our death and our tumbling down.
Yeah,
like
really.
You put those two next to each other and you have the transfiguration. It makes sense.
It makes sense. It is the perfect capstone to what the season of Epiphany is supposed to be about, the season of light.
Right.
You end it with the ultimate dazzling white light of the transfiguration moment. And then you go right to the smudgy ashes of Ash Wednesday. You go from the bright dazzling white to the black,
to the lowest of the lowest low.
Of like, the I low. Think, you are
I think
dust.
That was the conflict that was supposed to be in that gospel too, is you go from the white face of the transfiguration into the valley of the darkest demon-possessed people. These are from...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's all just messy.
It's all just messy, but it's what we're called to, which is stands in stark contrast with, in popular culture in 2025, there are a lot of Christians that think, to be a good Christian, you have to be completely set apart from the world. Don't mix with anybody of the world because you're inviting demons into your life. And it's like, it's just nonsense.
Yeah.
You have to be in the world. Mix it up with the real people. That's how you share that shining face moment with everybody. That's how you bring more people in. We're all just going to isolate in our own little communities and pat each other on the back. We're so good.
That's back to loneliness though too.
Yeah, exactly.
You're isolating. You're not creating relationships or bonds.
You're creating a clear barrier we're the chosen people because we're all right and we do everything right.
Yep.
And you can tell because we're a clean cut and we dress up fancy on Sundays and that means we're better. And it's like, that's not what it's about. That's not what we're called to do. We have these mountaintop Sunday moments for sure. And we all get dressed up and it feels nice to go to church. But then you're called to go do the exact opposite. Tumble down, go out into your real life, mix it up with the people of this world and call them in. Share your dazzling
I would smiles. Argue that we aren't even really called to this church thing either.
No,
like,
really.
This is for us. This is for us.
It gives us the energy to go out and do it.
A human-made, thing that we have done. And Jesus never said we had to do that.
Jesus said,
where two or three are gathered.
Right.
Maybe that was
I'll
Paul.
Be there too.
Like where two or three are gathered. He didn't say you have to meet in the church every Sunday.
Yeah, and you have to wear a suit. Yeah, we need it because it empowers us to go out and do the good work. But I think a lot of Christian communities have turned it into a a spectacle of a place to be seen and a place to see others. And you, this is our own little in crowd group. And we're the chosen popular people. And we can just isolate ourselves and we can be better than and set apart up on our own little mountains. But that's not not what we're called to do.
I know we're getting long in this.
Yeah.
But this goes into, I think this is why young people are so turned off by the church right now,
for
too.
Sure.
They don't want to be the set apart people. We have been, we grew up believing in this Jesus who sits in the dirt with people. Yeah. And then the church creates this atmosphere of being the set apart people only sitting on a mountaintop and the young people.
Shame, shame, shame to those other people.
And the young people are like, why would I want to be a part of that?
Yeah.
They're in their own humanitarian efforts, civil rights. Like they're doing their own stuff.
They're out there doing
the work.
Without
the church, because the church has said, no, we do the work. We do the work. And they don't do the work.
No, Sunday's not the work.
So, no.
The work is every other day but Sunday.
We're part of the church, too.
Yeah,
so, yes.
We're part of the problem.
We're part of the problem.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I know.
And so, I think that is a huge rift between, well, all the old people are like, where are the young people? And I'm like, they're not here we're not doing something right.
We are.
We've turned this into a thing for us.
Yeah.
We've turned this into a spectacle, into a check off the box that we're such good Christians. We went to church on a Sunday. And young people don't care about that.
They don't need that.
They've let go of this shame, this Catholic guilt or whatever, shame of not going. So
they
don't
unburdened
even
themselves
have that.
Of that. But now, why would they come if they don't feel?
And then why do I need an institution of the church to go help people? Like that doesn't.
Feed them either. Yeah, I know. It's St. John's Lutheran Church here in town, in Norwood. They have a great sign in their parking lot. At the exit that says you're now entering the mission field. And I like that. That's nice. Shout out St. John's. But that's a cool little way to physically embody what, it's like, you're here on Sunday and that's great. I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad people come to church and keep coming back to church. But the point is that you leave and enter the mission field from here.
Right.
Church is just the place. It's like church is like a refueling station.
Yes.
You get here, you fill up your tank, go back, tumble down the mountain.
Yep.
We're going out and then go out and do the real work.
One of my favorite sending words, one of my favorite that I've heard is go in peace somewhere else.
You don't have to go home, but you can't
stay
here.
Right? Somewhere else.
That's pretty good.
And you know, the church has value too for a community,
for sure. I need it every week
for a thing, but an idea that church is doing it all.
Yeah, church is the whole point. It's not the whole point.
It's not. And church has caused a lot of hurt and a lot of shame and a lot of trauma. So to have this idea of like, where are the young people? Well, we can't ask them to come to a place that has traumatized them.
Nope.
We can't ask them to come to a place that has isolated them for being in different communities, for different ways that they live their life, for different things that they wear, for different people that they hang out with. Those are the exact people that Jesus would go be hanging out with.
Yeah.
And the church has decided that, you're not good enough. You didn't put on the best for this place.
And you don't deserve to be here.
And
now
you don't deserve to be here. So,
I know.
And the question just comes up all the time of where are the young people?
Yeah. Well, that's where they are.
The church has, you're not this far in Love is Blind, but there is a conversation that happens. We do have to wrap this up.
Yeah. It's all right.
But there's a conversation that happens where they're talking to women, gay couple, LGBTQ, and they're having this church conversation of like, well, this church accepts you guys, accepts you two, and this church like blah, blah, blah. And she stops them and she's like, can we stop using the word accepts as a church accept? No, I am made in the image of God.
I am. Yeah.
I am. So the fact that you accept me, like, whoa.
Oh, good. Thanks.
You have the power to do that.
Yeah, that's a great point.
It was a really cool clip that I saw that it was like, it
otherizes people. Because could you imagine if we did that for any other aspect of being like, you know.
But it places the decision on the church, not on God.
They did it.
It's God's like, no. Already said that that everyone is a child.
Yeah.
Everyone is made in God's
image.
It's
the institution that's getting in the way.
That's the like, we accept you. Mm-hmm. Well.
Thanks, but what? I didn't need you to accept me. Yeah. Like,
so I think that's another huge issue for young people. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is on our other podcast called We're Going to Solve the Problems of the World.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, our Love is Blind discussion podcast.
Oh, that too. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get
too much time in the pods.
Yeah. Pods. Pod. That's an, I don't know. It's a working title, but.
Okay.
All right.
Can cut all of that out.
We're keeping everything. No editing this podcast. They were just off the cuff.
I just ran.
But yeah, thank you for being a part of the conversation. Thank you for continuing the conversation with us. And we'd like the conversation to continue more. If you have thoughts that you have, please put it in the comments. Follow us on social media. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. All Saints NYA. That's where we are pretty much everywhere. All Saints NYA. So search us up. Give us a comment. Let us know what you think. And we'll see everybody for Ash Wednesday on Wednesday.
Bye.
Bye.